webcasting to the world.
You remember the moment you saw yourself and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 28th of May, 2015. Coming to you from the home of Redemptionism, where we love every train of thought coming out of the Station of Freedom. We're coming to you from the newly painted GR Studios in Nashville, Tennessee, where with Mike Williams we say, what do you think is more important? What do you think about God, or what God thinks about you? And here from Houston, Texas, is that same great unteacher, the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Mr. Michael Williams. G'day, Mr. Michael.
Finally, I'm impressed with one of your quotes.
Yes, Mr. Williams, it was you I was quoting.
I don't know why, but finally I'm impressed, yeah.
And we both know what Mr. means, don't we?
Yes, let's not go into that again. Mr.
Hey, today we've got a special treat because, well, actually, let's talk about you first, and that's very rare for me. So you're the happy traveler, or in the words of the song, the happy wanderer, have just returned from East Tennessee. What is up there that's so, what, did you lay on a grave or something?
Well, not this time. I got to see my four sisters and my brother, a relationship growing and mending after 10 years of no communication at all several years back, and now just absolutely people are standing back commenting in restaurants, waiters, waitresses, people that see us all together laughing and cutting up and having a good time, commenting about, you know, how wonderful it is to see siblings getting together, you know, in their 60s. And two of my siblings are now in their 70s. Another one will go into her 70s next year.
Mate, that East Tennessee must be a very small town if everyone knows everyone like that.
Yeah, they don't. It's just they're willing to comment on it. And, of course, while I was gone, three of my sisters drove up with me 4.5 hours to my grandson's birthday. Now, Barris, you haven't seen this, but I'm going to show it to you right now. This is...
Oh, wow.
I know.
What's his name?
Anybody that wants to see it, just let me know and I'll send it to you. It's his first birthday with a little cake on his nose, his first diving into his birthday cake. His name is Corbin Dean Williams Snoddy. S-N-O-D-D-Y.
Now, they drove 4 hours to where?
To Marion, Illinois.
Is that only 4 hours away?
4.5 from, we passed right through Nashville. I would have loved to stop and seen you, but my sisters would have killed me adding.
No, that's okay. You're just like Mike. Mike never answers his phone. You don't stop and see me. I get that. I really do get
just
that.
Just like Mike?
Just like Michael Blanch.
That one. Okay, yes. You're going to get to hear from Michael in a bit, so you might as well go ahead and get in some more.
Oh, I will. Let me tell you something. I'm hammering him. I am not letting up on him. And I can't get over the fact that he just laughs. He laughs. It's like... Yeah, well, get upset, but I'm going to laugh.
Yeah, exactly.
If one of us is going to get stressed about this, it won't be me, he says.
Yeah, he's learned too much of the gospel. It's like, if you want to fight, go ahead. You know, I'll do the laughing, you do the fighting. So,
what else? Hey, Michael, Michael Blanch, you're 2IC. That's not an American term, is it?
No, it is not. You'll have to tell me.
Okay, well, the 1IC is the first in chief. Or first in charge, and the 2IC is the second in charge.
Correct.
You, here in America, you prefer to have pretentious terms like president and vice president, like there's a gazillion of them, and I never know who's a what, but anyway. So he's your 2IC.
Mm-hmm. Vice president of Mike Williams Ministries.
What's he ever done for you?
Michael.
Let me start with this one. Has he ever answered your phone calls?
Yes, he does. He's particular about who.
Oh, so he's selective. What a mongrel. Now I know where I am on the totem pole. Now I know.
I just wanted to throw a little fuel on this fire. Michael has been with the Gospel Revolution, goodness gracious, back to the early 90s when he started traveling with me and helping in the ministry, handling the tapes, which we had to have a huge van to drive around to load and unload these things. And Michael handled schedulings, some schedulings, and working the tape tables and doing the driving and getting from place to place, which we were on a weekly schedule from place to place, and sometimes two and three times a week scheduled. So Michael worked with me for about 4 years, and we've remained friends all of these years. And when a position came open with John Mull, Richard John Mull passing, our dear friend, I've really considered who would replace him.
Did Richard John Mull, did he answer your phone calls?
All the time.
So you decided that was too much for you and you wanted a guy who wouldn't answer phone calls.
Well, the answer's mine. So you got to get that. This is just you that he will not answer your phone calls. You just got to accept the truth, Bears. I know it hurts.
Bloody selective ignorance, that's what I call it.
I know it hurts, but but the truth will make you free, all right?
Yeah, that's what he said.
So anyway, Michael serves on the board and always has good insights to share during the year and during our board meetings, which takes place at in February every year, and always contributes to that.
Is it true we gave him a Jaguar last year?
No, unless it was a tiny little ceramic Jaguar.
It's up on the web somewhere. Is it Right Wing Watch? I don't know. Someone said that Mike Williams Ministries gives bonus cars to its.
You're not getting a car out of me, Barris. You can keep going and suggesting as much as you want. I'm not buying you a Jaguar. That's the final word.
I wasn't wanting a Jaguar. Creflo Dollar has two Rolls Royces. I'd settle for one.
Well, you're going to have to go work for Creflo then.
Graplo Dollar.
Isn't that a mess?
Gosh.
I can't think of anything better to say. But, so you're going to hear from Michael the rest of the PowerCast.
What makes Michael so worth listening to?
I think number one, his experience in growing in the gospel right along as it has grown over the years, right from the gospel of peace through the gospel of grace, all of these. Michael was there many times when I had books and concordances and Bibles and translations spread out all over the floor, and reaching for one thing in a notepad here and asking him to look here, look there, help me with this, can you look at that, read what that says in this translation or that translation. So he's been very much part of it and an excited part of it.
Now, just before we start with Mike's interview, which I've pre-recorded, maybe it would be sweet if you gave out the reason why he hasn't answered his phone calls, why he's been so darn busy lately.
Yeah, well, I'm more than glad to do that. Michael was fired. You would think that a man had been fired would have plenty of time to return his phone calls. Michael was fired in a struggle in a corporate arena that he was in. And so Michael and I talked quite a bit after that, and because he was trying to figure out what to do with his life. And I said, well, you're all these skills that you have in building this organization, even though Michael wasn't the president of the organization, he was the one who built it. I said, just start another one, And he did. And no one, especially Michael, had any consideration of the shot out of the cannon that would be.
Wow.
And he went from unemployed to hiring people. Within 6 months, he had several hundred people under his employ.
Wow.
And organizations and building organizations from the East Coast to the West Coast. And It was really quite remarkable. And the best thing that ever happened to Michael, as far as career is concerned, is that he got fired.
So you're saying that his wonderful success in his field is the reason he doesn't answer his phone calls to me?
Partially. The rest of it, he just don't like you. Which, if anybody was seeing Michael, Michael recorded this here at the house while visiting me and carrying on his business. He has to carry on his business. He can't even visit without carrying on his business at the same time. And he was so delighted, goodness gracious, when he got off of his interview with you. He was just absolutely a happy camper. I know you tried to insult him every way that you could, but it just didn't work. Now, folks, I tell you what, you really are in for a treat. You will inevitably see and hear the marks and the impact of this ministry on this young man. Michael is now 47 years old, I believe it is, and he was a mere lad of 20, 21 when he first started working for Mike Williams Ministries. And my family loves him. There's parts of my family that won't speak to each other, but all of them would talk to Michael. So he is cherished, and I cherish Michael and my friendship with him. And so I hope you enjoy this interview. I know I can tell you Michael did. He absolutely loved it. So I hope that you take the time to listen. You're going to hear a man who's been powerfully impacted by the gospel, and that his perspective of life and of himself and of others has been revolutionized by the gospel revolution. And now listen, folks, because Michael has lived out this gospel, as many of you have, listen. Don't listen just to the words, but listen between the lines. There has been an impact that is so powerful that will resonate with most all of you, unlike any interview that you're going to hear that will take place here on this PowerCast. So here I give you my friend and the vice president of the Gospel Revolution and Mike Williams Ministries, Michael Blanche.
And the man that doesn't answer his phone calls.
Gospel Revolution.
Today we're talking with Michael Blanche, who has a coveted position in the Gospel Revolution, namely that of the vice president of the Gospel Revolution. He is. Michael, you're unshaven, you're unkempt, you're wearing black, you look like a goth. What's with the new thing?
Well, I suppose it's the influence of spending time with Michael Williams here in Houston, Texas.
He'll turn anyone black. I got that.
Yes, it's true. It's true. My snow white Minnesota purity has been spoiled here in the home of gospel giant Michael Williams.
Wow, I don't even know what to say to that, mate. Your purity has been robbed.
It has. But the juxtaposition of light and darkness is a beautiful thing, I suppose.
Nothing like a good juxtaposition between friends is what I say.
Yeah, that's right.
My wife used to say that to me often before she divorced me.
Well, we gotta love every part of ourselves, right? The good, the bad, the pretty, the ugly.
No,
we're all complex and complicated.
No, I'll leave that to you. See, I believed you once.
Yeah.
Yeah, the last time we talked, what, about a year ago or something, and we talked about a whole bunch of things, and we played that over a series of podcasts. But you don't answer my phone calls, so I'm sorry. I don't even know whether to believe you. I don't know. I don't know what to do. I'm lost. I'm like an orphan in the forest with you, Michael.
It is true. This is a day of reckoning and accountability, and I own that. Now I know. Jeff is mad at me too. He's like, does he pick up his phone?
But you blessed us all with at least changing your message, because your message used to say, just leave a message and I will return the call. It was all BS, of course.
Oh yeah, I was a father of lies.
Well, you're dressed in black, you're unshaven, now you're the father of lies. I get that.
I had to stand on my horns before I got on this podcast.
What would you like to do?
You know, actually, it was interesting. I asked Michael, you know, what topics would you like to talk about? And he says, well, just open up your heart and see what's there. And I'm always thinking about the practical application of gospel thinking, and I'm always fascinated about just belief systems in general. Mm-hmm. And today you and I were troubleshooting technology with Michael and his printer and the internet connection and operating systems. Our personal belief systems that we create is much like an operating system.
Well, let's start right there. As long as I have been around computers, which is a fair while now, there has been a basic meme, and that goes garbage in, garbage out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it operating system controls how we sort every bit of data and input, how we assemble information, how we disassemble information. But I think the garbage in, garbage out is very accurate. Of course, we then create our own versions of reality based on our thinking. Mm. So then I decided to step back from a theological point of view, and I was just, you know, my background before I met Michael was music and psychology, and I remember I was reading this book by Dr. Charles Strobel. He was a physiological psychologist at the Mayo Clinic out of Minnesota, and he studied the impacts of stress on our lives. And of course, we know like exercise or lack of exercise can contribute to stress. But he said the number one factor in living a healthy and happy life is our thinking patterns, which I would think is our belief systems. So in his book, he talked about one thing we all have in common, regardless of what we believe, is frustrating events happen. And he called them heart hassles, defined as disagreements, disappointments, delays, setbacks. And Barris, do you have any idea about how many heart hassles, frustrating events happen on a daily basis? About 30 a day. So just do the math. I penned it out. 30 heart hassles a day, defined as disagreements, disappointments, frustration. It could be small events. It could be pretty big events. Multiply that by 365 days a year times 70 years. That leaves you with 750,000 frustrating events coming at you. That reality could have a huge impact on your health, on how you view yourself and others. And so you said garbage in, garbage out. I think my spin on that would be check yourself before you wreck yourself, you know, because these things come at you. And you know, before I learned about the gospel, before I upgraded my operating system, we all had these same experiences, but I would attach so much meaning to it. And it starts out kind of innocent, because sometimes something great happens. Like I was in a car accident as a teenager. I survived unscathed. Car was totaled. And I'm like, wow, it's a miracle. And it was a miracle I didn't get hurt. But then I assigned meaning to that, because this operating system was religion that said you earn God's favor. Something you did.
So the first thing was that God saved you for a special purpose, I guess.
Yeah, and that sounds great, and it felt good.
When are you going to get around to that and answer your phone calls?
What? Oh, Barris. But, of course, what the cost is kind of hidden, right? Because then as soon as you are feeling great and blessed and favored, what about when something doesn't work out well?
Oh, boy.
Right? You know, and then all of a sudden, you are obligated based on that operating system, which is established as fact, to assign meaning to that disappointment. And clearly then, if the miracle or blessing was a result of God's favor, then you are obligated to go, well, the setback is an outgrowth of God's disapproval of me.
So two questions.
Yeah.
How do you change that? And how long does it take?
Well, that's the beauty. I would say you've got to upgrade your operating system and
what every day or just once?
Well, no, I actually think there's a daily discipline to this. I really do. What you think will determine how you feel will determine your actions.
Our thoughts determine
our emotions and feelings.
Our emotions and feelings, which determine
our behavior and our actions towards ourselves and others. Uh-huh. And so I'm getting really kind of pragmatic on just a human level here. And so, you know, I find myself when something bad happens, my default, my human nature is very reflexive and it's full of blame. I call it the stinky twins, BS and BO. You blame others or you blame yourself. Like, God, you're like, why is this happening to me? You know, why? If only, and you know, and you're full of regret and resentment and And of course, that thinking, you're already in a bad spot. Okay, you're running late to work because of a traffic jam. But then it's how you interpret that moment. And if you get reflexive, and you're blaming yourself, and that emotion is indignation, like that idiot driver, I'm an idiot if I would have left earlier, and then you're full of hostility, and then your behavior is, you're ready to snap at your husband, your wife, your coworkers. It's full of fight or flight, you know, withdrawal or attack.
Uh-huh.
But the discipline is, something bad happens, and I catch myself, and I know that my thinking is going to trigger emotions and behavior. So I just got to pause for a second and realize if I don't determine my thoughts are going to determine me. And I think religion just conspires against sanity and clear thinking. So I just got to kind of catch my breath for a second and go, hold on. I'm in having a bad situation happening here. And I just pause for a second and I put on my gospel hat, you know. I suppose it was Ephesians, right? The helmet of truth or something, right?
You know?
Mm-hmm. Is that a right-wing religious attack that just happened there, Barris?
It is. It's a call from, that party requesting funds. Okay.
Oh. Hopefully they should be calling to give funds, not request funds.
I'm waiting for the day a church rings me up and says, we want to give you some money because we want to get blessed.
That'd be great. But in my daily conduct with people, I want to be in a place where I'm calm, curious, and concerned. And I do know that I've always got to be in a place of thinking, what could be going on with this person, especially the adversarial religious folk. You know, I just know those who condemn greater is their condemnation. They're operating out of fear, out of anger. It's like you don't back a hurt dog in a corner. And so I could go, well, they're all screwed up. They're religious nutbags. They're jerks. No, they're my brother, my sister too. I mean, I want to have a beer with them and hang out with them because they're not that fun. And there's a moment of accountability sometimes, but I like to think that, hey, you know what? They're just hurt, and something's going on in their life, and that then fosters emotions of calm, curious, concerned. But those fostered emotions, I can't just manufacture them. It's a discipline. I got to really put on my gospel hat just for that moment when I'm confronted with a hostile moment. And then what that then, of course, facilitates is open dialogue, honest discussion, and I find myself more effective in life. That new way of thinking couldn't have happened if it wasn't for the new operating system, which is the gospel. Did that make sense at all? That might have been a strained analogy or metaphor.
You used the word adversarial. Usually it's used to describe the legal system that we have under the Westminster system, and after that in the American system of justice, it's an adversarial system. He said, she said, and so forth. And it reminded me that the Bible says that where the law is, there is wrath. I like what Mike says. If you want to see wrathful people, just look for a legalist. And isn't that funny? Adversarial and legal all seem to be in the same little mix there.
Yeah, yeah. They're cousins. They're all kind of intertwined.
Mm, inbred cousins, I'm going to say.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, it's interesting how everything we see and experience, think and feel is adjusted to fit within our beliefs, which we believe is fact. And if you're legalistic and you're under the law, those frustrating events in life, the good and the bad, they funnel everything through that operating system. And unfortunately, that garbage in does produce hostility and adversarial behavior towards one another. If what I believe causes me to foster hostility and anger towards myself and others, I might want to rethink what I'm believing. If what I believe is fostering a space for love and respect and connection, that's a good thing, you know. And it really is that simple for me. And when I find myself slipping into a lot of judgment and anger towards myself and others, I pause and go, okay, take a deep breath, Michael, and then I. It's a daily discipline of renewing the mind to the gospel, because, you know, those religion is all around us everywhere, you know, in people, and we're exposed to it, and it can, I don't think it's just an overnight transformation. I do think there's a renewing of the mind daily.
Here is what our friend Richard John Mull said about that.
The older you get, the more your brain cells get filled up with garbage, and it's hard to dump those things. I've tried to do one of those dumps where you just go and plug in somewhere and just let all the old crap out and make room for the new. It just doesn't work that way. You got to override it somehow, and I'm working on that.
What did you think of that, Michael?
You get the garbage out, but it's an empty space. There's a vacuum there. You got to fill it in with some other thoughts and new belief systems. Actually, you dump your old operating system, you got to upgrade to a new operating system.
Okay, it's Monday morning.
Yeah.
9 o'clock. You're in the traffic on the way to work, and somebody gives you the finger. How do you do that? How do you practically do that? How do you put on your gospel? I mean, I like the wordage, and I like all of that.
Yeah.
How do you practically do it?
You know, it's emotional and mental gymnastics. I actually literally put my armor on before I leave the house, because I know for a fact that there's going to be 30 disappointments, delays, and disagreements that are going to come at me. It's just a fact.
Okay. How do you put your armor on?
Well, I kind of put a pre-programmed thought in my mind that when the shit comes at me, or the situations come at me, I'm going to operate from a place of grace. And I tell myself, if I honor the anger and frustration of that moment, I'm obligated to honor anger and frustration for the next 29 disappointments that are going to happen throughout that day. I also just know personally that the moment you slip and you get frustrated, that your immune system becomes depressed for 36 hours. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
The first thing to know is that we are hardwired physiologically for fight or flight. I mean, we've got our problem-solving center, which is our cortex. But we also have that little sucker called the medulla oblongata, the size of a walnut in the base of our skull, which sounds very relaxing. Say it with me. Medulla oblongata.
But it's medulla oblongata. A chestnut.
Yeah.
The size of a chestnut.
Yeah. But it's really just a time bomb, you know? And it's, I call it my evil twin. But that's our default mode, you know, and it's probably served us really well during prehistoric times. If you're being attacked by a prehistoric wild boar, you want your, you know, lizard brain to kick on and turn into the Hulk and fight for your life or be able to run. Problem is, in today, our brain and our body doesn't know the difference between a prehistoric wild boar and a traffic jam or someone flipping you the bird. So first of all, just being aware that you are hardwired to flood full of adrenaline and cortisol and chemicals that will conspire against problem solving and being productive in life. To me, that was just revolutionary, just to know that that's my default mode. And if you don't determine your thoughts will determine you. So you got to be disciplined. And in the morning, I wake up and I just say to myself, look, I know there's going to be 30 disagreements, delays, and disappointments that are going to face me today. And I've got to make a choice. When they come at me, I'm going to be in a place of controlling my thoughts. Because if I don't, my thoughts will evoke other emotions, which leads me to this test in Harvard. So they took these students, they hooked them up to wires, they did saliva swabs to look at their immune system. And this is the power of thinking. They said, just take 5 minutes to think about a moment where someone wronged you, or you had a disappointment, just a bad situation. Just after 5 minutes of thinking, they measured their immune system, and their immune system had plummeted like 50%, and they were more susceptible to illness, sickness, and their immune system remained depressed for 36 hours. And so it would explain why we sometimes have a disproportionate reaction to the smallest things, because you're already loaded for bear. Loaded for bears. So they then they did another test and said, we're going to do it again. This is the good news, by the way. That's kind of depressing.
But this is the good news?
Well, here's the good news. It's coming right now. They did the same test and said, now take 5 minutes just thinking about something positive. Be thankful. Something that makes you happy. And lo and behold, their immune systems rose and maintained at a productive level for 36 hours. So this sounds corny, but every morning I wake up and I'm not one to sit down and, you know, chant and do deep meditations. And I don't really even really do a lot of prayer per se, but I just spend 5 minutes thinking about how thankful I am and how much I love people, my friends, and it's an emotional discipline, and it just I can feel my immune system being stronger, and I feel like I have more ability to take on the challenges that the world's going to throw at me as a result. And
okay,
yeah, so
okay, Norman Vincent Peale,
yeah.
What's that got to do with the gospel?
Well, I think you know, the gospel in itself is powerful to know that you're righteous, but I think it just removing the burden and obligations of religion. That's what is what the gospel takes away. You know, righteousness is revealed. It was always there. But it's pulling back that veil of Moses. It's stripping back that old operating system. I think if you're in a belief system where, and I'll just say it, under religion, without the gospel, those 30 disappointments, disagreements, and delays, it's a fact that the reason they're happening is because God is disappointed with you. And when good things happen, it's because there's favor. And that creates mental and emotional instability. You feel schizophrenic, mentally ill, because you are interpreting every action, every experience, every up and every down through this old operating system called religion, and you assign so much meaning, it just sucks up all the bandwidth in your brain and your body. There is no room to operate at a higher level. There just isn't. And even if there's if you take this higher level of thinking, you plug it into, it's like taking the latest Apple operating system and trying to load onto an ancient version of Windows. It won't work, you know? And so the power of the gospel is to really to remove that legalism, remove that law, remove that spiritual abuse, remove all those surely if I do good, I'm blessed. Surely if I fail, I'm disqualified. That belief system that we believe is fact, until you remove that, I don't believe you actually have the ability to entertain a new way of thinking and being.
Michael, you're the VP of the Gospel Revolution.
Mm-hmm.
What's that mean?
Well, it's.
I mean, apart from not answering your phone calls,
it means that I'm a VP that needs to step up. You know it.
Yeah, but you said that last year when we talked.
Yeah, no, I did. And the few briefcasts we had have been very, very meaningful.
The few what?
Brief chats that we've had, I've always enjoyed.
Would you like them to be longer? I can arrange that.
Well, no, actually, I actually do enjoy them. I think it's one of those things, it's like your mom. You love your mom. And you know, if she calls.
You didn't. Oh, really?
I know. But, you know, it's a real honor, you know, to be the vice president of, you know, Mike Williams Ministry and this Gospel Revolution is really an honor, I just have this incredible respect for the work that Michael and you and Jeffrey. I mean, you guys are doing the work every day,
That's because we answer our phones.
It is. You do.
You're not getting off live. You've got another 3/4 of an hour of this.
Of course, I'd have to call you for you to answer the phone, wouldn't I?
Yeah.
No, I think the thing is I gotta do a better job picking up the phone. I've just seen, I travel with Michael in the, you know, late 80s and early 90s, when we were just mixing law and grace. And, you know, you didn't see lasting results. You know, it was just religious.
You saw a lot of money. I wouldn't have minded a bit of that.
There was a lot of money. I suppose that's why some of the religious world, actually, it's just such a giant racket. But, yeah, we went to churches where maybe like, you know, 1,500 people, they're raking in the dough and, you know, it's amazing how you can control the masses and say, you know, cast your bread upon the water. It'll come back sevenfold. You know, if you want to, you know, if your loved one is dealing with cancer or or you've got to do more. I remember sitting in some church services where people would come up and say, "Why, you know, why did this happen?" We were at a church called Country Bible. I told you about this on a call a while back. A church alive is worth the drive. Church, and I still remember this family. God, they were just great. Stan and Sherry, and they had the five most beautiful kids, and they were deacons in the church. And it was one of those word of faith churches where blab it, grab it, name it, claim it, prosperity, etc. And their two-year-old boy, Ben, had leukemia. And I remember guest speakers coming in, and they were praying for Ben. And Ben didn't get better. And the pastor of the church started to blame the family for their son not getting better, and that it was actually a stain on the church and a result that they probably weren't giving enough, doing enough, believing enough. And it was just one of the cruelest things I ever saw. And that was one of those moments where I realized, God, what I'm believing is just so full of hostility, and I just didn't feel the love or experience. And so Michael and I traveled through churches like that for years, and I think we just realized that religion's broken, and it's wonderful now to be part of a ministry that's not going to conflate or mix any law with grace, not even a little bit.
So what is the job? I know you're taking home a matzah from the Gospel Revolution. You're making a bunch of money. I believe that we gave you a new Jaguar last year.
And it's beautiful. It's a wonderful passion of volunteerism as a VP. But I think my role, and you and I did start this conversation, is trying to figure out how do we do a better job. We got the message. How do we reach out to the masses? And there's people out there that need to hear the gospel. How do we find them? You know, and how do we get them tuning into the podcast? The podcast is playing. They just don't know that it exists. We've got a website. They don't know it exists. So, if we're going into a community to, you know, set up a meeting for Michael, what's the prep work we can do in advance to get people involved? And what's the message, I think? You know, what's the hook, you know, to get people in? What's, you know, kind of what's in it for them? And you got to start where they're at, not where you want them to be, I think, is probably where I would start. You know, for you and I and Michael, we're like, oh, we're so done with guilt and shame. Let's move forward to evolution of thinking and teaching. And I think there's a place for that, especially for the existing flock. But we got to remember there's still a lot of people where what seems so basic and elementary is profound for people that are suffering under guilt and shame and religious spiritual abuse. And
so what you're saying is... because this was a conversation that started with us some months ago, and it was one of the questions I was going to ask you, Michael, but how do we engage? How do we not just engage, how do we grow interest? How do we engage people in a new way of thinking? How do you think we should do that? And the first thing I'm hearing you say is meet them where they're at.
I mean, I think this is one of the reasons why I need to pick up my phone so we can have more discussions and brainstorm on this. But
you do realize this is why you're not the president; you're only the vice president. Don't you?
I do, and that's okay. You are just beating me up, but at least you're not saying that, you know, God's going to throw me in the pit of hell for this.
Well, I was going to come up to that.
Oh yeah, you're like, I'll throw you there, pal. No, it's great. It's great.
I want to ask you something, which really it just annoys the hell out of me, is what it does. So people come into the Gospel Revolution and they go. And they come in and they go to Buddhism and they go to atheism and they go to hell. We don't even want to believe in a God that used to kill people in the Old Testament. And I'm thinking of two of my friends. One is Pat Martin Lockshaw and the other is Bola. Both of these people have come through and these people support us, I believe.
Yeah.
And I am so black and white that either you're in or you're out. You know, you're for us or against us. And I'm not very long on the, well, if they're not against us, well, let's back them anyway, even if they disagree with us. And that's my built-in, from wherever I got it. Let's not go into the history of that.
Uh-huh.
But I was raised under a pew in a group a little bit to the right of Attila the Hun. So just, uh-huh.
Context.
That might explain it.
Yes.
Part of me says, I resent that these people are freer than me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it. They should, by geez, they should believe like me. And if they can't, what the hell are they doing even on our Facebook page? By, there is this thing in me which is much more legalistic than I would like it to be.
Yeah.
Comments?
Yeah. It's old programs, diehard. I actually think it's great that I think one of the greatest skills in life isn't necessarily like I've arrived. I think being aware, self-aware of where we lie in our emotions and the tension between that is beautiful. Actually, I think that's very authentic and honest. You could just pretend like it's all great. Actually, I love that you're embracing every facet of who you are as a person. So actually, the question that you asked is a good question. I actually think the fact that you asked that question spoke in such an authentic way is more beautiful than the question itself. You know, to have the courage to say, I'm happy, I'm angry, I resent that. Because you're saying I'm human. You know, sure, you're right to the righteousness of Christ and you're part of this creation. We're all one. I don't see any problem with struggling with where we stand on issues and how we relate to people and where they're at and where we're at. At least you're aware of that, you know?
I'm also aware that I'm a sociopath and maybe even a psychopath.
Well, you're a friend.
Is this all good?
It is. You're a friendly looking sociopath and you're regaining your sociopath strength by drinking from that glass of water. You call that a bubbler? Is that what you call that?
A bubbler? What, this?
Yeah. That's water.
No, that's vodka and water.
Oh, it's doctored up.
It's well, see, on Thursday afternoons, which is when we're talking, on Thursday afternoons, I've got the podcast out, and this is my time.
Yeah.
You are intruding on my time.
Yeah. Because
you couldn't lift the phone and talk to me at another time.
I know. Yeah, I know. It's it is fun though to I think there's a lot of humanity and like I've been on the giving end and receiving end of good and bad behavior. But even that it makes me feel more connected to other people. You know, when I see someone else that's not behaving the way I'd like them to behave, I see myself in them like, oh God, that's me. I do that too.
Yeah, really. I wish you hadn't said that. I want it to be perfect.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Don't let perfection be the enemy of really good, because you're really good. Jesus doesn't make junk, Ferris.
Jesus doesn't make... What would Jesus do? Exactly. We can go meme for meme here for the next half hour.
We could. But it is good to see people be free, and it's... I suspect you're also... It's probably more mixed emotions. You're probably very happy for them and a little bit like, God,
exactly. And Bola and Pat Martin Lockshaw, Michael just said exactly how I feel about you. Probably if the truth is known, I'm downright damn jealous.
It is funny. Like the teacher frees the student and the student is freer than the teacher. That's a great place. And then the student's teaching the teacher and so on and so forth. That seems to be a trend throughout history. So that to me is a good thing, you know, and as long as we're always open to, I think that's the thing about the gospel and you and Michael is that I love that you guys are always exploring questions. It's not always about just being right. It's about really questioning. And that just doesn't, that's just so rare, so rare. There's not, not just in religion, just in life in general, politics, life, business, marriage. I'm right, you're wrong. The idea that there's a space to be vulnerable, to be right and to be wrong, to me is amazing.
A place to be right and to be wrong. Wow. You've had a lateral promotion.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
About my first year garden, my new business.
Well, let's go from where you were to where you are. What happened?
So I had a really great rewarding job working on workers' rights with a national organization, and there's a lot of security. I was just telling Michael, I am so happy and healthy these days. It is unbelievable. And you reached out to me after I got that unexpected layoff, and it was amazing. Actually, the thing about that is, I knew in my mind that I was going to end up in a better place, but by God, I was allowed that space to go through anger, grief, disappointment,
denial.
I had to go through all that. You know,
Thing that Elizabeth Kubler-Ross said about death, the four or five stages of what was it? Grief, I think.
Yeah,
I can't remember.
Grief.
But that is so true for so much in life.
Well, yeah, you know, it is. And there's no shortcuts. There really is no shortcuts. I think if there's a shortcut, it would be inauthentic, you know, and it wouldn't be genuine. And I'm glad I went through those stages of pain and denial. I created more capacity in my heart towards other people going through struggle, because I experienced it. And I am you, you are me, you know. And also going through that rough patch, it created a space for my community to reach out and love me. I got, you know, and it meant a lot. Like, just the call that you left on my voicemail when I got the message meant a lot. And, you know, Michael reaching out and family and friends.
Do you find you're getting kinder as you get older, or are you getting more cynical?
Actually, maybe both, but kinder. I am, you know, there are bouts, you know, ignorance is bliss, you know, and there's times where, I was talking to Michael about truth. I just love truth, even the ugly truth, you know, because if you can accept truth, then you can calibrate and deal with it from a point of authenticity. And so, like, I have no illusions about the crisis that our world is in when it comes to environmental, social, and economic injustice. And people go, how in the world do you continue to organize, you know? And don't you want to just quit? Someone asked this, do you remember Ralph Nader, the consumer?
Yes.
Someone asked him, how do you put up with all this? It's how do you not lose your mind? And he used the analogy of, for me to say I'm going to quit because things are so bad, that'd be like a doctor going to work and saying, I quit. There's just too many sick people. I can't deal with this.
Now, Michael is almost like Pollyanna-ish. He's all about how great the world is going to be when more of us understand the gospel, and how that the evolution of improvement is linked in with the world knowing that we are one.
There's no doubt that where there's crisis, there's opportunity. You know, I'll give an example. I was just out in D.C. and I just launched, I got a new client called D.C. Vote. Imagine this, in the seat of our nation's capital, the seat of democracy, if you move there, you lose your rights as a citizen. They don't have representation. They're not a state. D.C., 770,000 people, more people in D.C. than in Vermont. Right now, in every state across our great country, in Minnesota, I have two senators and congresspeople that represent me and the voting population. So what you've got there is it's more of a city state. And in 1972, they actually did get to – it was always controlled by kind of Congress. It was the district of D.C. But D.C.'s got home rule. They can pass budgets and they can pass laws, but they are
– Who are they?
That would be the voters. And the city council is the ones that actually write the budget for the city. But Congress approves or disapproves of it. So
Congress?
Yep. So here's the deal. So I'll give you an example. Yeah.
So you want to raise land taxes?
Yep. Yep.
Congress has got a vote on this.
Yep. Congress, they can approve or disapprove it. The city, years ago, they when there was an AIDS epidemic and people were dying by droves, the city voted for a needle exchange program. Congress said, nope, we think that's immoral. And they overturned that and people died. So the answer is get full representation so they can control their own budgets.
So and, you got this DC Vote organization as a client.
Yeah, and the biggest thing that the people that were organizing are saying, we've been fighting for this for 25, 30, 40 years. Why in the world should I become a member, make a contribution, and take action now? And this is not Pollyanna, but I told them, we all know when Congress overreaches, we can advance our issues. And so I do think it's that juxtaposition. You got to have a lot of thunder, lightning, and rain in order to have flowers, I suppose. But it doesn't. Good things don't just birth out of nothingness. It comes out of struggle.
Do you think that social improvement is a gospel issue?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because the gospel says we're all one. And if I'm hoarding wealth and privilege for a few while neglecting others, that to me is violating gospel principle that we're all one.
I often tell folks that Eleanor Roosevelt said this: a nation can be judged by how it treats the weakest amongst it.
Yeah, the most vulnerable. Yep, the for the children. To our elderly. Yeah, and she was quoting Aristotle or Plato or one of those great philosophers.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. But, you know, there's it's the saying, we all do better when we all do better. I think the gospel fosters concern. I think religion fosters a very self-centered way of thinking. And you may even be a good person, but you just don't have the capacity to turn to your brother or neighbor in need because you're just trying to keep yourself right with God all the time. You know, and it can just run interference with the goodness that is in someone's heart. I think there's a lot of really great people. They're just bound up. I don't think they're necessarily bad. They're just overwhelmed. Their bandwidth is sucked up with guilt, shame, trying to reconcile their lives with God. They don't have the energy or ability to turn to their neighbor and their loved ones. Not because they don't want to, it's just where they're at.
Michael Blanch, Vice President of the Gospel Revolution. Now you're dead. You're gone. You're pushing up daisies. You've slipped off this mortal coil. You're a memory. Except for this sole statement on Wikipedia about Michael Blanch, what would you want it to say?
He was kind. Yeah, I think he was kind, he cared, he loved. I actually think that would make me happy. He was kind, and he cared, and he loved. The best in us will live on in the lives we touch. He was free, and he's the vice president that never answered his phone. This has been fun, Barris.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. I like that. It's the only way I can survive, making it fun.
Yep, turn that frown upside down.
But what's he going to do the next time I call you? That's a problem.
I will pick up. Hello. You've reached the voicemail of Michael Blanch, the vice president of the Gospel Revolution. If you like a gospel that is sugar-free, salt-reduced, can seat a family of four in complete comfort, leave a message. Beep. Oh, wait, hey, hello. Hey, this is Michael. Someone calling?
hello, this is Jesus. What would I do?
Jesus would leave a message after the beep.
That's the nice Jesus. I am not the nice Jesus.
The wrath of God. I am Jesus of the rock.
Oh, God, Michael, this has been fun. Thank you, friend.
That was wonderful. Well, you're welcome.
All right. Okay, bud, you have a safe flight home. And,
thank you.
And we'll talk. This catches us up.
This is wonderful.
Well and truly, right. Thank you.
Love you, Barris.
Bye-bye, friend. Love you.
Gospel Revolution.
And so it is that we must leave you, friends. Don't forget to visit www.onemikewilliams.com and get your copy of Mike's book, One, The Gospel According to Mike. Hardcover $27, paperback $15, Kindle edition $3.03. You know, you, our listeners, are the real stars of the Gospel Revolution. You may be a virgin listener or have been following the message for years, but if you're a virgin giver, we'd like to ask you to break the drought and call our office at area code 321-220-4373 and speak to Jeffrey about how you can join the amazing people who keep this gospel of grace and peace going out every week. $1 a day, nothing to most people, but to us it makes all the difference between business as usual and reaching so many more ears with the sound of freedom. You want to leave a message for Mike or a question for him to answer, dial area code 234-564-0971 and leave a voicemail. Our web address is www.gospelrevolution.com and on Facebook at Friends of Mike Williams and The Gospel Revolution. Thanks to Marcel Roos in the Netherlands, All the Gospel All the Time is being broadcast 24/7 at myradiostream.com/gospelrevolution. And now it is good night from myself, Barris Bartlett, from the GR Studios in Nashville, Tennessee.
And it's good night from Mike Williams. I had to figure out who I was right here in good old Houston. And yes, all of the flooding is south of me, central part of town, southern part of town. I've stayed high and dry, and I have survived a 500-year flood for Houston. So please, the next time that it rains, don't call and ask if I'm okay.
It must have been God's will to preserve you.
It was my will to move to a place that was not in a flood zone. I checked it before I bought the place. So thank you, guys. We love you. And Barris is correct. You guys are the real heroes here. And I know you identified with Michael's story. And hearing his words, I know, had to be very inspiring to you. We love you, and we will see you again next week.
We hope you enjoyed today's podcast, but if you didn't, remember, just because you're offended, it don't mean you're right. So if you prefer learning how to think to being told what to think, then join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again.
Much better.
Jesus rose from the dead, and you can't even get out of bed? Come on, folks. Because there's things you know, there's things you don't know, and there's things you don't know that you don't know. This is approved by Michael Blanch.